We're gonna go cold, and we're gonna go live in five.
Let's do a quick cold.
Let's do it in five. When I get down, we're gonna go cold. Okay. This is how we count down to the cold open.
Right. Okay. Are you going to say one, or are you just going to stop at two?
Not going to say one, and I'm also not going to say two. Old broadcast style, so I'm going to go 5, 4, 3.
By the way, you're wrong about that. You know, I've heard you say that before. Everyone always says the two. It's just the one that's not
safe. 5, 4, 3. Welcome to the cold open. Welcome to Smartless.
Smart.
Ah.
Everybody take
a breath. Everybody.
Jay, in through the nose, out through the mouth. Now we start. Hi.
Hi. Hey. Thanks for coming today. Hey, you want to know? Oh, good.
What? Oh, no, sorry. Do you have a story all queued up?
Yeah, I just actually thought of this. Our show opened last Saturday.
You know, yes. I saw you on my Instagram-ish thing.
And
you were saying hi to the audience, and I immediately got a little nervous. I was like, my God, there he is. He's on stage. He's in front. He did it. So you did it. You did an initial, are we in previews right now?
Yeah, first preview went great. Second one went terrible.
No. I love all the photos. You look like you're standing on the bow of a boat, because you're always like standing there like looking off into the distance.
Yeah,
you know,
Simon the King of the World or something.
Yeah, he's proud, and he's here. Tell us what was good about the first and bad about the second.
Well, you'll relate. You like this kind of talk. It's talking shop. You know, when you kind of connect to what you're saying, it's very real and it's authentic, right?
Right.
And then sometimes when you do a show after a million times, there's a little tiny veil between you and the words.
Disassociate. Yeah.
But you're doing the actions and you're emoting, but it's a little manufactured.
Yeah. And that's how the second show was.
That's how the second show
was. But I bet the audience, I bet it didn't feel good, but I bet it still was good.
Sean, explain to the audience a little bit, because you told me that, you and I spoke earlier and you told me that. And I said, well, that's to be expected. And I said that because—
It's very frightening.
It's kind of a known thing, right? You do your first show—
Yeah,
and it's great.
It's like gangbusters.
Yeah, and then there's that sort of sophomore slump.
Yeah, I guess I wonder if it's an energy thing. Like, oh man, I'm exhausted, right?
Yeah.
And then maybe that's just, I don't know.
And then you kind of build back up again.
Yeah, but when you're standing on the stage and you're saying the words, and like your mind goes blank, but your mouth keeps talking.
Right. Was it just you going through this, or did the other actors have a good time? Was it a good show for them? How were they? Sometimes you can just rely on the rest of the team.
And you know, right? JB and I and our crew were coming next week to see you. And
yeah,
JB,
so you're nice
gonna, I don't know if you know this. This is the best news Sean told me today. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
It's an hour 15.
Yeah.
Ooh, it's a tight hour 15.
Do I get to sit front row? We're at dinner before we know it.
Do I get to hold the book? Can I hold the book front row?
Yeah.
And be the guy you turn to if you forget a line?
I would love that.
And then I give you the wrong line. Or you look to me and I just look up at you and I just give you a real polite middle finger.
Yeah.
If you gave JB the book, I would say this is a compliment.
You just give me a line from 12
AM. JB would be off book in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
That's the way his brain is.
Yeah.
I hope so.
You would be really good at that.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. But when those curtains open and the lights come on, you're like, oh, I have to do this. It's the scariest thing in the world.
How was Scotty? Was Scotty a puddle of nerves? I bet he was.
He looked scared.
But you know what?
He looked like he doesn't know what to do.
I went to PT today, physical therapy, because I'm standing so long on stage. And so even right now, as I'm talking to you, I have to learn how to do sit-ups. Like, you know, like you...
Oh, is that what they said?
Engage your core. You got to engage your core.
Engage your core, yeah.
PT doctor said the middle's too soft.
And you're wearing double Hokas, right? You got custom double Hokas on.
Hey, why don't you get one of those cashier mats?
Custom double Hokas.
Hooked them at the bottom of my shoes.
Yeah.
Cut out a couple of shoe size cashier mats.
Like snowboards.
So you've got to engage. So you're doing sit-ups. You're trying to do exercises to engage your core.
Your core. So your back, right? You guys all know that. Yeah. But sure. I just kind of haven't been doing that. Anyway, who cares?
Don't get me going on core.
Yeah.
You know.
Guys, someone who has a really good core is my guest today.
Here we go.
He grew up in a remote Australian community, 4 hours from the nearest town, spent his teenage years surfing.
Fed income.
and at one point repaired breast pumps in a factory for $10 an hour. He moved to L.A. to be an actor and was about to quit until one last audition flipped the script.
That's the way it always happens,
he named
isn't
his son after Brad Pitt's character in Legends of the Fall, but you may know him as Captain Kirk's father. It's the brilliant, charming Chris Hemsworth.
Hemsworth!
Hello!
Wow! Hello.
Hey guys, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well, Chris.
Guys, this is Chris knows my wife, okay?
And I'll
leave it at that. I'll leave
how
it
do
at
you,
that.
Oh. Well, we got to start there.
You'll leave it at that, and I'll pick it up from there. Chris.
Wait, for real?
Tell.
Yeah, they've done a little bit of partying together.
What does that mean? It's getting worse. Where have you been at all those parties, Mike?
I know.
You weren't involved?
So
you weren't allowed to come?
I'm kind of jealous. Well, I lost my privileges years ago, and I think it's better for me to stay out of what we call trigger environments.
I should probably do the
same. Wait, what are we alluding to? What happened with the parties?
They've got some mutual friends, and they have fun, and they create trips, and they go places. And,
like recently or in the past?
Trips of all kinds, yeah.
Yeah, I think recently, yeah. And then I stay home, and I work on stuff. I do charity work, and I fix the house. I take care of the kids.
That's what I call watching TV now, huh?
Yeah. you share, Chris? Hi, nice to meet you, by the way.
Hi, Chris.
Thank you for being here.
See you guys. Thanks
can you share with us one of those vacations or trips?
They're hard to recall, aren't they?
They're quite a blur. The last one was at Palm Springs, and there was about 50 or 60 people flown out there, and it was quite a big 3-day event. And you were missed, Jason, but we talked about
it. I would have crushed
you would have crushed me.
Back in the old days.
I'd
still be there. Hey, it's Will, funny. You know what, Will? It's amazing you and I never partied.
I know. We did. We've been through this. We did one night. Jason doesn't remember, but before our privileges were suspended. Years ago, Jason and I had a night out, I don't want to get into the details of, but we were irresponsible in our 20s, and there were moments where
we had fun. I had some fun with David Cross too, a couple of times too. Anyway, did that,
iPhones and cameras, and you can kind of. Yeah,
Jason took his belt off. He tried to climb a light pole once. I was with him and David Cross, and I only stayed late because I was like looking out for their safety because they were both acting like ding dongs. And remember, I had your belt for like 2 years.
Yeah, why did my belt come off?
Yeah, what happened just after that?
Yeah. Was I looking to self-asphyxiate?
Oh, my God. Anyway, Chris, welcome to Smart Life.
Yes, thank you so much. I want to start, in the intro, I've read so much about you coming up to this, and I knew none of this. First of all, I just want to, in the intro, you named your son after Brad Pitt's character. Is that true? Tristan?
It was
from Legend of the Fall? Did you talk about it with your wife?
Yeah, no. So we liked the name, and then we were sitting on the couch one day. We had a few different ideas, and that film came on, and the scene where he's on the horse and rolls into the space across the field, and couldn't look more legendary. And me and my wife both went, "Oh, this is the coolest character ever, isn't it?" And his name is Tristan, and I was like, "What about Tristan?
How about that?
That could work." And then off we went.
How about that? That's pretty cool.
And now, your kid grown into that name? Like, does he look like a Tristan now to you?
He does. He has shorter hair now, but he had for the first kind of, he's 11 now, for the first kind of 9-10 years, he didn't cut his hair, so it was long blonde hair.
Really went with the Legends of the Fall.
I didn't know if it was an influence by our doing or whether there was some sort of.
It wasn't a Halloween costume.
But he.
did he look like Mini Thor?
He absolutely did, yeah. And he's incredibly high energy and rides horses and motorbikes and surfs. And so.
That's cool.
He fits the name.
Did you ever meet Brad and tell him that?
Not that particular story, no. I met Brad once and I'm a big fan, obviously, and kind of had this awkward interaction where I went for the handshake, or he went for the handshake, I went for the hug, that kind of in-between thing, and almost turned into a kiss, and then I was thrown out of the party.
My God, it would slow down too slow for me at that moment.
I was standing across the room, my agent was like, "He wants to meet you." I'm like, "Who? Oh, no, he doesn't want to meet me, whatever." And then eventually an hour later, I was like, oh, Brad, you're here. Oh, just trying to act all nonchalant.
Hey, look at you.
Failed miserably.
One of those.
Look at you. You're doing well.
Where are you today? Are you down under?
No, I'm in New York. I'm in a press tour for Crime 101, a film we're promoting.
Oh, I can't wait to see that.
You know where he is, JB. Look, you can see where he is.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That light switch right there turns on the fireplace if you've been looking.
That's what that does?
Yeah. I never knew where. Yeah, it's going to take a little while. It's going to click for a bit. You won't explode. that Bart Layton. I love that guy. Yeah, what a great director he is. Yeah. I can't wait to see your film.
I just saw it last night. It was fantastic. Oh, you loved it. Yeah, thank you. Incredible.
Yeah.
No notes? Edge of your seat, Sean, the whole time.
No notes?
A couple. Is it locked?
They're not locked yet.
Always notes.
Okay.
If you want to give us some notes off air, I can. I won't take them so personally.
No, Chris, don't you want to do a film next that doesn't take like 6 months to shoot and all these sort of life-threatening stunts you've got to do? And don't you want like a nice, calm sort of like the equivalent of a sitcom in a movie?
Sure.
You know, that you can just relax.
The 4-5-6 month shoots are tedious, and I know you've all experienced this, but unnecessary too, I feel like, at this point. You know, like the technology of cameras and lighting and what you do in post-production, and everything is still done how we did it 10, 20 years ago. Yeah. And you have, 20 big trucks there full of equipment sitting there just in case, and especially on the bigger the budget, you know. And and you just stand around and do nothing. Then you do a smaller film, and it's fast paced. You don't have the luxury to sit around and wonder, and it feels like the preparation's almost done in a far more specific way because there's such a limited time frame. And I love that style of working. Like, I grew up working on a soap opera, and we'd shoot 20 scenes a day, and as you know, the scripts were not great, but you made them work. But just the momentum you get from that, and the sort of, just by having your feet on the ground continuously day after day, the knowledge you gain from that, I think, is fantastic. But
learning to be good quick, right? Like you've got to be good fast on those soap operas.
What was the soap opera?
Or you learn to be bad fast too, which is what most of what I did. But
We just had Margot Robbie on. She said she was on a soap.
She was on Neighbors, and you.
I did Neighbors for like an episode, and then I did Home and Away, which is the sort of competing one for like 3 years. And
when Margot was on, she talked about when she moved to L.A. that there was like an Australian mafia that helped each other out kind of thing. Right? You know what I mean?
Well,
were you part of that?
There was like a driver. Like all
can I be honest? I always felt there was the Australian mafia kind of film industry. And then the folks that had trained at NIDA, and I think Mel Gibson and Cate Blanchett, and you know, the big acting schools, and then the theater group. And then I was on the soap opera. And I always felt a little outside of that cool mafia bubble.
Right.
I remember kind of turning up to a few premieres and kind of being on the guest list, but not really, and having all those awkward moments. And I honestly, when I came to LA, I didn't know that whole crew of Australian people. And I started working and eventually met them all, and you know, Joel Edgerton and a few folks that, you know, good friends of mine
love
now.
That, but Joel.
I always felt I was, I did, you know, I did a soap opera, I did Dancing with the Stars, so I wasn't seen as the big taken
seriously. Wow.
Everyone was giving you the Brad Pitt handshake?
Yeah.
Rent a car from the Romanian guy? Margot rented a car from a Romanian dude who didn't require any ID.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, no.
Well, now I imagine you're fully embraced, and it's all one big
it
happy
is.
Party.
It's such a, it is. It is. Because it is such a small industry, you know, and those who have had success in Australia and make the leap overseas and work, there is just such a cool gang of, you know, people and support now.
It's remarkable. Again, we said it with Margot, but it's remarkable how many Australians come off those two shows and come and have huge success in this country.
It's really cool.
In the film business. It's remarkable. It really is.
Yeah.
It's the SNL of Australia. Yeah, you know what I mean? SNL bores so many stars.
All right, so you're in New York and you're doing a bunch of press for Crime 101.
Yeah,
right. I would imagine you're going to do a talk show or two. But are you noticing? Are you doing like some of the content stuff that is kind of like a part of most of these press tours now? Like Willie, I know you've got a Hot Wings out there. I still haven't seen, but I'm dying to. But like
I saw clips of it. It's really funny.
So like have you been doing some of that stuff?
I did. I actually did Hot Wings for a previous film. A lot of fun.
Yeah.
But not on this.
How far did you get? Did you do all 10?
I did, and I was getting really cocky and kind of just more, and this one's not so bad. Yeah. And Will, you know, by the ninth or tenth one, it's just a different game. And they just stopped recording because I was like about to throw up, and they got me ice cream and milk, and I was And we were all supposed to go out for dinner that night, and I hadn't eaten all day, and I did the show. And by the time I did the show, it was the first thing I put in my stomach was this.
So you were hungry too.
Of hot sauce. And then I just went back to the hotel room and I sat there for the next 12 hours hugging the toilet bowl.
Did you sit down?
I didn't. Yeah. I was just on the floor. Nothing was operating properly. Everything wanted to come out.
Why does it?
It's so. I had to take the ice cream and I ended up slathering it on my lips like zinc, like a surfer.
Tell me slow. And then was it dripping down your chin?
it was. I honestly, at one point, I was like, I wanted to rip. Like it was spurting so bad, and I was just the whole time. I was slightly angry.
And then you enjoyed it.
He just kept looking at Louis K.
By the way, I did. I called him out. And by the way, the only reason I went all the way through is because they told me, JB, that you had made it all the way through.
Sure, not a problem.
shut up.
Not a problem. Yeah.
This mouth can take a lot. Hey, but what? I only took one bite.
There's nothing enjoyable about having it that hot. Anybody wants to have that shit on their food? Like,
I know,
what
but
are you
did
doing?
You do? Did you eat the whole wing? I just took one bite.
No, one bite. One bite.
Yeah, that's all it took.
Well, Chris ate the bones. That's why he threw up.
But I was just on. I did Graham Norton with John Bishop.
Oh, wow.
You did? Yeah. Oh, nice.
Lovely bloke a fantastic film, by the way.
Oh, thanks, man. He's a great dude, isn't he?
He's great. He's amazing, and he told the whole story. What a beautiful, story. The kind of thing you can't write. You know what I mean? Real life kind of shows you the better stories. But
what would the sequel be on that, Willie? What would be the sequel?
Is this thing still on?
Yeah. John Bishop? Yeah. What would happen with you and you? You'd go to the Olympics with Laura, right?
By the way, no bad pitches. Keep going.
And she'd win the gold
as a coach.
She'd win the gold as a coach.
Uh-huh. As a coach, right.
And then you guys would go on tour doing a stand-up tour
as
a couple.
Canceled. And I'd get canceled on tour. Right. And then it would be, you know.
Let's write it.
Yeah, let's write it. Here we go.
It writes itself.
Chris, I haven't seen you since we were singing that song in that car on that crazy commercial we did.
Karaoke?
No. What was it? It was for a video game.
For a video game.
Some headbanging.
Sounds like a payday. Congrats.
Yeah. And artistic, integrity, expression, all of that.
That too. It was a crazy, huge production for a video game commercial. It was a mobile game.
Yeah. Yeah. It was. Yeah. What was it called?
Chris, do you play the.
We loved it. We love it. We loved it so much.
We love whatever it was.
Do you play those video games that you need like a headset to play? You know, you're shooting people up?
No.
Willie does that.
No.
Well, you don't still do that, do you?
I don't. It's been years, actually, to be honest. Yeah.
I want to know.
Sean, you're into Sonic, aren't you?
The burgers or?
No. The
immediately the food.
We'll be right back.
And now back to the show.
So, hey, Chris, I want to know about growing up and talk to me how that started and where the first love came from. Like, what was the first thing?
Well, also,
where
also an acting family, Sean. It should be pointed out.
No,
like,
for sure. Well, like I was getting there. Well,
well, I'm sorry.
Yeah, neither of my parents were actors. My mom has more of an artistic flair. You know, she paints a lot and writes, but. And was interested in acting, and then she got pregnant with my older brother when she was 19, and then had me, and then had my younger brother, and so we kind of ruined our dreams in that sense.
and there's three. Are there any more than the three brothers?
No, it's just the three of us. Yeah.
There's three, yeah.
And
okay.
Grew up in Melbourne and then moved to Northern Territory in the outback and lived in an Aboriginal community there. And my dad was mustard cattle and buffalo and so on. And it was it was the complete removal from the suburban Melbourne city life. We were literally, you mentioned before, but 4.5 hours outside of Katherine, southeast Arnhem Land, and it just a different world. Like my most vivid memories and some of the most beautiful memories I've had from.
How old were you when you left there?
I was first time I was about 4 to 6, and then came back to Melbourne for a year, and then went back up for another year and a half.
Wow.
So you know, do you know your way around a farm then with cattle and stuff like that? Could you get by?
I mean, I was young, you know, I was just kind of exploring and doing, you know.
Doesn't make you uncomfortable though.
No. I was around it all and was sort of fascinated.
I don't think he gets uncomfortable with a lot, JB, let's be honest.
I'd be surprised.
Unlike me, yeah.
he's not skateboarding around Hollywood, you know, going to auditions.
I'm so soft. Why am I so soft? I'm grown up out back.
But did you have like, this is a dumb question, but in the middle of basically nowhere where you grew up, like what was the impetus for, did you have a TV and you're like, oh, I want to see that from that person on that TV show or?
So the first time we lived there, we were in kind of shanty looking shacks and then a tent at one point. Like it was proper, like out in the middle of nowhere on different cattle stations. And so no TV during that time. The second time we had a TV and there was a truck that would come and deliver food and supplies to the community every, you know, month or so on. And he'd drop us off a couple of VHS tapes. And I remember watching, as a really young kid, Terminator 1, a bunch of other random sort of things, which are great for kids at the age of 5 or 6.
Yeah, sure.
And it wasn't that inspired me, but that was kind of, I don't know, my earliest memories of what cinema was and that experience. And then I just love watching movies and not so much to be an actor. It was more of like, oh, I want to be Legolas in Lord of the Rings and I want to go and, you know, swing a sword and be in that fantasy world. And again, not escaping what I was in, you know, in my own world, but it, just the sheer adventure of it. And then by the time I was 18 and finishing high school, it just became a real obsession, like it does and like it needs to be, I guess. And then I did the soap opera and then off to LA and then off.
I want to get back. So the Whole Foods truck just drove right up to the community just open up the back.
There was a big shed in this community. There's a, you know, a lot of separate communities throughout Arnhem Land, and they would do deliveries with basic sort of, you know, bits and pieces that would go into this, what was the shop, which was literally just a big shed. I did a documentary actually with my dad we go back to that community, and it's this, the same shed there from 30 something years ago.
Did it come back to you?
Oh my God, the huge like sort of nostalgia the detail to which like these places prompted the vivid memories was astounding.
Probably surprised you, right? You didn't know it was going to come back?
I thought it would have changed dramatically. And I went, and I remember every little corner of the little streets we were living on. And I remember what games I was playing at what places and where I was hanging out. And there was this big freezer in the back of this shed where they kept all the cold food, which me and my mate, you should just go and sit in and, you know, eat the chocolate bars and so on, because it was so hot out there in the middle of the outback. It was a fascinating and beautiful place.
And is that still home? Is that still main base for you, Australia?
Australia, yeah. Byron Bay, we live like northern New South Wales now, and moved back there 11, 12 years ago. It was kind of like my daughter is 13, my boys are 11, so it was right around the time my boys were born. We kind of were set up in LA and, not enjoying it. You know, like nothing was shooting there. We were filming kind of everywhere else. But
well, you're traveling anyway, so you might as well. Yes. I mean, it's a lot longer, but you might as well live where you want to live. Is that the idea?
Yeah, absolutely. And then we, you know, you'd come home and there's paparazzi and all the sort of the trappings of, you know, living in the sort of that space, and move back to Australia. And it's been the greatest decision because it's such a. It's like, you know, when you come back from work, you want to go on a holiday. Like coming home for me feels like a holiday. We have big farm and horses and motorbikes and surf. And
that's so cool. That's how you guys, you and your brothers grew up too. Just like no helmets, riding, like no supervision. Just like crazy, right?
Not because my parents didn't care. It was just because Jesus, Sean. But we lived. About 20 minutes from like the main sort of suburban areas in Melbourne, up in the hills, and the nearest neighbour was, you know, a kilometre or two away, and it was just all bushland and rainforest sort of set up around us, and so we would just spend, you know, outdoors adventures and playing different characters, and I think that's, to be honest, where the sort of intrigue or interest into that, you know, transportation into another.
How do you go from that, and you have this sort of interest, and what was the first audition? Like, what was the first thing you go, like, I'm going to go read for that?
I did every Wednesday night I used to drive an hour and a half into the city, into Melbourne, to do this acting course. It was like a 2-hour... you know, session where they'd record everything you did, and you'd have a little VHS tape, and you go home and watch it, and you go, wow, it doesn't look anything like I thought it would, and so it's kind of a shock to the system and trial by fire and a pretty good sort of wake up, but you learn quick, you know, and as opposed to just doing acting classes and not ever being confronted with what you're actually putting on screen.
You learn a lot from watching yourself. I do about what, you know, oh shit, don't do that again.
100%. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And all your little sort of tells or habits or things you're repeating are like, oh wow, that's I thought I was kind of in a completely different space and I'm doing exactly the same thing I did before.
Right.
Right.
But I got an agent, and then my first audition was I think the first job I got was, I think it was called The Saddle Club. It was a Canadian-Australian show about the...
Sean, you used to run the door at the Saddle Club, didn't you?
Run the door.
I still do, just for some extra money on that.
We take those easy, cheap shots. Feel free to jump in anytime you think of one.
It was a show based around horses and club. And I came in as a vet at the age of 18, you know, as a Doogie House of the vet world.
That's funny.
Sean would let the bears in too, as well. Yeah.
Sure. He was a vet of sorts, I guess, in that way.
Veteran, yeah. Wait, which brother got the first job?
My older brother, Luke. He worked on Neighbours actually for a while as a steroid selling football player.
Funny.
That was quite a role. and then
in the intro, I read that one job that, because you said you wanted to quit. And I mean, always, like Jason was saying, it always happens that way. When you're like, I can't do this anymore. Yeah. And then something in the universe goes, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You have to. And what was that? Was that Cabin in the Woods?
Yeah, it was. It was. And it's funny. Is it the universe, or is it this sort of you just surrender to the process and you remove some of the desperation that may be coming out?
Yeah, you kind of hit fuck it.
You fuck it.
And people can tell. Yeah. And it's kind of, it's that sexy indifference, guys.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
No, what is that? Sorry, what is that expression?
Here's what it is.
It's a bumper sticker. It's amazing. We've all know what that means.
When you're exhausted or you come in and you're hungover or what, and all of a sudden it's like your body just doesn't have the strength to light your being up with adrenaline, just kind of sit and in a pocket.
You're not thirsty. You're not looking. You're not desperate. Yeah. You're just like, this is me. This is the way it is. Take it or leave it. Yeah. And there's something about that. People are like, I like that.
Which it comes through the like excessive sort of the preparation too. You know what I mean? Like, and that was what I learned. Like I would try and replicate that by like not caring, which of course, I did care. So it was like, well, how can I get to the point where I can let go? And then it was just about over-preparation and where there was no stone unturned. Then you felt like, well, I've done everything I could. Anytime I would walk into a room and audition and feel like, ooh, you could have learned these lines a bit better, or you should have done this, and then that kind of voice takes off and does all sorts of shitty things.
You ever fallen into the trap? I used to fall in this trap of trying to pretend like I didn't care.
Sure.
So acting twice in an audition.
Yeah.
It was like the most idiotic, most exhausting bullshit thing. Like I'm already sweating, you know, trying to pretend like I'm not going to sweat.
Yeah.
Wait, so just the sidebar I was going to say is the day that Cabin in the Woods came out was also the same day my movie Three Stooges came out. But I think you guys beat us. Anyway, moving
this
on.
Picture. Let me tell you something about this picture. These idiots, these three, these brothers, they're so stupid. They can't do
was it the same day?
Sean, I actually watched 10 minutes of that, like, not 4 days
Thank
ago.
Thank you. What, The Three Stooges?
Yeah. Yeah.
No,
didn't. On the big screen?
You gave it a full 10 minutes?
A full 10 here on the TV. And then we lost power or something like that. And so I couldn't see anymore. But
sure.
It literally crashed the power at your house.
Jason, you mentioned before, you know Bart Layton, or you...
Yeah,
you just know
yeah. I'm a huge fan of his film, American Animals.
Yeah.
And I started pursuing him like some crazy fan after that. And he sat down and had lunch with me and humored me for a bit. But cannot wait to see this.
He's incredible. This was, I think, sort of the best experience I've ever had in a set. And I've had some amazing times. And it kind of reminded me, to be honest, of like, Furiosa with George Miller felt like this, and Rush many years ago. And it's that thing where there's just this beautiful. He is just such a craftsman, such a master. Attention to detail is beyond anyone I've ever seen.
Some of those shots are incredible.
The cinematography is stunning, and he wrote the script, cool. So there's this deeper sort of understanding of every element to it. But then he's just this kind, collaborative, humble human being, which you don't get the two.
I was just going to say that kind leadership, right? Ron Howard on Rush, Bart on this. It ends up yielding that great input from this entire team.
Yeah.
If
yeah.
somebody at the top is not a monster.
Yeah.
You should look into that.
Yeah. I'm reading and reading.
Take note.
Yeah.
Because I've heard a lot of stories from your sets, I get a lot of anonymous emails. A
lot of it's true.
Yeah.
A lot of it's true. Monster. I'm working on it.
Yeah. Real Groucher, me Groucherton is your nickname. JK, everybody loves JK.
Wait, so a couple like things I didn't know. Okay,
I want to talk back about off the sidebar, or we're into
no,
mainstream
no, this is back
questioning.
On,
I don't know if we have enough time for the segment. Things you don't know.
No, but look, you got. I love the places you'll go. Right?
Oh yeah.
So you right? So so when I first of all talk about your tattoos, then I'll get into that. So you've got tattoos, which I didn't know you've had this many tattoos. So tell us the tattoos you have.
They're a bunch of random kind of...
Start with the back tat.
Starts the back tat, the Harley Davidson right and the hawk.
That's no, the one on the tailbone.
Low back.
Lower.
Oh, the barbed wire.
Wire.
The one that says, just breathe.
Open for business.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
My tattoos... So I have a Dr. Seuss tattoo. My daughter I used to read that book to her a lot, and my mum read it to me, the places you'll go. And she just would draw that little character and loved it. And so I got that tattoo.
Oh,
that. Isn't that great?
And then a few years later, I was like, I'm kind of sick of it. So I started getting it taken off, and I did like one laser session. And then she came home one day, and she goes, it's rubbing off. What happened to it? It's rubbing off. And I was like, did you still, I thought you were sick of it. She goes, no, I love it. So it's now kind of half faded, but it's still there. And
then
I've got another, it's a bunch of my arm actually, the little drawings that she did that I was sitting with a tattoo artist one night, and it was like 10 o'clock and he's designing all these different things and all this sort of sacred geometry and trippy looking stuff. And my daughter walked out and goes, Dad, I can't sleep. You're making too much noise. I'm like, sorry. And she sits down and starts squiggling and drew the three little images here, which one of them is just, and the guy next to us goes, that's the Wheel of Dharma. It's the 8 steps to enlightenment. So it's this, she's drawn that.
Oh, really?
And then wow. The 5-pointed star, and, you know, so he looked at me and goes, I think they're way cooler than anything we're designing. And so I took a photo of that, and that's that. And then
that's awesome.
That's so cool.
A bunch of other sort of scribbles, yeah.
and your vendors' friends, which is cool.
I made disparaging remarks about people with tattoos on a podcast in the UK. Do you know that guy Ramesh? He's hilarious. Do you know that dude over in London? Anyway, I made a sweeping generalization, kind of as a bit, and I got a bunch of hate from it.
I said
there's a direct correspondence between the more tattoos you have. By the way, I don't even believe this. The more tattoos you have, the less interest. The more tattoos you have, the more boring you are. All I said was boring. People freaked out, and I'm like, I'm just fucking around. It's like I don't have a scientific opinion on this. I'm just fucking around.
Sounds like someone who would like a few tattoos. Would you like a couple?
No? I would like a couple, actually.
I thought you had one.
I don't have one.
All I have are just my kids here on the inside of my arm. That's it. But I feel like I want like 1,000 more. I feel like the dam
is
broken.
Friends who are covered in tattoos. That would mean that I hate all my friends.
The problem is I get sick of them, and so I'm into them for a few weeks.
That's what I'm worried about.
I want to just get them all removed. And
but you're not sick of the ones from your kids though.
The kids have a bit of something to it, but I've got some other ones that are like the weird sort of psychogeometry one, which looks like the Illuminati kind of vibe to it. And it's
I
like
love all those little tiny drawing weird ones, you know? Like I think like what you were showing on your arm, like just like the like little too doodles.
Yeah, that's
know?
What I, yeah.
I love that. Yeah. I want some of those.
Yeah.
I love, you know, but then you get a lot. Do you have any of the ones I see people like on their arm? It's like, stay alert. And I'm like, do you have to look at it to remind yourself? Like,
you breathe. Know, and if you're just looking at it, you're not alert.
Just breathe. Breathe. Just breathe.
I don't have any any quotes or any.
I wanted JB. I always threatened that if the Leafs win the Stanley Cup, I'm going to get my whole back of Wendell Clark, who's been retired for years, but my hockey idol, holding the Stanley Cup on my back. I think I'm safe for now for a while.
We're struggling along with you here in Los Angeles.
Sean, you don't have any, right? You don't have any.
No, I've always wanted one. I was wanting
Let's do one. Let's design. I'll design one for you, and then you design one for me.
Sean, if you had to get a tattoo of a snack food on your body, what would it be? Guns to your head. One snack food on the body.
Yeah.
It would have to probably.
And it can't be hot dog.
Can it be a Twinkie? What about a Twinkie?
No, it'd probably be a Snickers bar.
A Snickers bar. And where would you put that?
What about right on my neck?
On your tummy. Right across your tummy. That's where it ends up.
Lower back. It's the same way.
Lower back. Next
to barbed wire.
And people, because that's what people will snicker.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
All right, back to the show.
So, Chris, in Crime 101, this is, I mean, we always talk about this on this podcast, but like when people from Australia or the UK have to do these American accents and they're so good and they're so believable. And then you speak in your regular Australian, it's just like, I don't know what happens. It's like, how do you do that? I could never do an Australian accent. That's the hardest one.
Try right now.
No, I couldn't do it.
Guns to your head.
I can say one word. Chest is cheesed. That's all I know.
That sounds more Kiwi. Chest.
That sounds what?
Like Kiwi. It sounds like more New Zealand. Chest.
Yeah.
Oh, it does.
We'd say chest.
Oh, you would say chest?
Say aluminium, Sean.
Aluminium.
Aluminium.
Yeah, I can do a British one. I can't do it.
Let's hear that guy. I mean, visit from that guy.
I think most of our television and film growing up is American, so there's a bit of, you know, we have an ear for it, I guess. But I've also screwed it up many times as well, and, you know.
Will you go back in? Will you ask, like you'll see an early cut of something and you'll ask the director, hey, could I go in and redo that line or that line?
More now. Like, I didn't even know I had the option in the past, and I see some review talking about, you know, not so favorably. And then the worst was a Scottish accent I did for something, and someone said, it's the worst Glaswegian accent we've heard since the Fat Bastard in Austin Powers.
Which is one of the greatest all time.
I was like, oh, you did a great job.
Yeah.
It was great. I love these guys on the sidelines throwing bombs like they can do it.
Yeah, I know. I think you're brilliant at it. And then you meet Elsa, your wife, through a dialect coach?
We did, yeah. Yep. It was a...
Like, what was she going for?
The Dalet coach? Or Elsa?
Yeah, I mean, no, but I meant, like, why were you there at the same time?
Oh, no, we were both training separately with her, and she said, oh, I think you'd like someone else I'm working with. And I said, oh, what's her name? And looked her up and thought, oh, she looks lovely. Sure, give me a phone number. And then
Really? That was that simple?
And then we went out for dinner, and then I went and shot a movie, and we came back at dinner, and then went off and shot another movie. And so it was like we weren't together, but we'd sort of been in contact for kind of 8 months, and then... got together and very quickly had kids and marriage and all that fun stuff.
But that's nice, though. That's kind of a nice slow burn, though. Like, you kind of, like, ease into it a little bit, a couple dinners here and there. And
yeah, a bit of distance, kind of long distance.
Was that a novel idea to you, Will, just a couple of dates before you start?
Hey, man.
Hey, so wow, so you took her out to dinner a couple of times, did you? Chris, your kids are now at the age where they can see how badass dad is and they can appreciate kind of like what a set is like and that might be a fun sort of atypical work environment. Are any of them getting kind of the bug to do what you do? Any interest there?
Yeah, they do. My daughter was in Love and Thunder, the last Thor film.
Yeah.
And she played Christian Bale's daughter. And then she's...
Did she dig it? She
was like... I asked her to, I said, look, I can... Do you want to do this role? And she goes, oh, yeah, cool. What do I have to do? And I said, I'll just read these lines. She goes, no, I don't want to read the lines. And I was like, well, I'm going to record something to send to Kevin Feige. She's like, no, I'm not doing it. And I was like, okay, well, you can't do it. She goes, no, but I want to do it. I'm like, yeah, but you've got to, this is like an audition.
She won't read.
So she finally did it. They were like, great, loved it. And then she did Avengers, and this is 3 or 4 years later. And by this point, she's so much more jaded about it all. She kind of is like, hates the whole scene and everything. But, tells me she enjoys acting. We do one take, wide take, mostly sort of in my direction. And she gets up and goes, okay, we done? I said, nah, are you serious? And she goes, how much longer? And I'm like, we're here all week, and you've done like one wide shot. And every single time we'd go back to the tent or the trailer, and they call us in, she'd be like, oh, God. And I was like, India, you begged me to do this. You wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And then her brothers
are
like,
happen.
We'll do it. We'll do it. You're such a sook, India. And so they probably have more of, my boys probably have more of a, like, I don't know. They like the kind of, they're a bit more of a showman kind of, they like that space. And
how were the Russos on her? Did the Russos take care of her? Was Joe just hammering her with notes?
Just heaps of notes, backstory, and incessant on sort of the study and the prep she'd done. No, not at all. They were fantastic.
And Chris, do your kids, I read that they critique your movies. Do they actually write them or do they just tell you?
No, they'll just blatantly tell me. I mean,
they're tough.
But that whole generation, they're like, yeah, visual effects weren't as good in that one, Dad. Or the action was. I don't ever remember commenting on any of that as a kid.
Yeah, my kids never like watching anything that's like 5 years old. That's the sickest.
My kids came and saw our Mind Bradley, the Is This Thing On? And Abel, my 15-year-old, goes, a lot better than that one, the movie you did with the talking dogs. I go, hey, dude.
Yeah.
Did your braces get paid for?
Yeah. How are you doing the house you're living in? Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty comfy. Yeah,
exactly.
Pretty comfy right now.
Do your kids give it up, Chris? Well, like, if you do something great, will they go,
Dad, that was awesome.
They're really supportive. They remember the first time when they were sort of realizing what it was that I did, and the first time my son, I took him to the cinema to watch, to see Thor, and he was just running up and down the aisle, and I was like, just gotta sit down, and he's jumping up and down the chairs, and I was just like, just trying to sit him down, hold him down, and then I was like, fuck, this is my movie. I'm fucking on the screen. And then, I got worried about someone's going to yell at us. But I thought, and then in the end, he was like, having so much fun. He's sweating. And he's like, right, let's go. And then so he left halfway through and he ran up and down the hallway. And he's like that. His temperament's big. But he became obsessed with it and had a little hammer that he'd run around with and smash things. And
That's cool.
I get it. My 15-year-old wishes you were his dad too. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, long line of kids.
But it's changing. Yeah. Like the 11, 13-year-old time when, there's a whole new vernacular and all this sort of new new language they seem to roll with, and everything's got like a sarcastic sort of twist to it now because of all the YouTube shit and so on.
Yeah.
And I'll say something and they've got, ugh, cringe. I'm like, no. I'm fucking cool, right, mate? I'm not yeah. You know, I'm one of the cooler dads, right? And it's like, it's all fading in the distance.
It keeps us honest.
I love that. You know, this, the Avengers Doomsday, I was at Anthony Russo's house and we saw the trailer. We were the first people to see the trailer.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
That's cool.
This will be the, I don't know if you know this, this will be the 10th time you've played Thor, which is really cool.
It's wild, isn't it? I know. Wow.
It's wild. And, I mean, that's couple really, more times really, really, really cool.
Yeah.
There's more?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. But it's just been the, it's been so much fun. And it's what I've really enjoyed is, unlike, I think, a lot of what the other characters, the scripts were given, they have had to be pretty consistent. Whereas working with Taika on his films versus Kenneth Branagh with those films, and then from with the Russos, all had quite a different sort of tonal opinion, but also let me kind of try different things because I was getting same with my tattoos. I'd be getting really bored of the same thing and having a real need to kind of just throw it in different directions. And I was talking to Kevin about it, and he said, "Oh, it's cool because we've." The audience now expect dramatic turns with the character, and whatever we do next, that we've got some ideas to do something pretty unique again, and or hopefully be.
Yeah, I was going to say you must have ideas. You guys all must have ideas about where your characters might go because now you guys, I guess for a long time now, you guys have been going. There aren't comic books to write these scripts off of. You guys have gone past those, and so.
Also an obligation though, JB, isn't there like a, not an obligation, but like, because the fans are so, they know these characters so well. So you've got to handle it kind of with care. Like you take chances, but you've also got to like make sure that they don't get pissed off.
No, for sure. Because you still can pull from, there's so many different stories within the comic books, and you pull from ideas and certain, you know, directions. But and each even within the different comic book artists, writers, they had sort of slightly different takes as well. So there's variations. But you do have to be careful because when we made Ragnarok, it was quite a twist, you know, and with Taika's time.
Such a great movie.
And it was so good. And it was so fun, and there was a huge kind of like appreciation for the shift. And then Love and Thunder was kind of like a Monty Python sketch, and we sort of took the piss probably a little much, and then there was some of that backlash, you know, that there was the real kind of, why is he a goofball and why is it this? And you know, violently offended, and we were like, oh, we're just, you know, having fun or trying to try something different. And so,
It is cool that there's that partnership there, though, with the audience as well as the filmmakers.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't really exist in other. I mean, maybe Star Wars. There's some of that as well, but part is really cool.
Yeah, Star Wars. Sorry, Star Wars.
If you can stick around for a couple hours, Chris, we can talk Star Wars. Wait, what about, like, in the intro, I didn't know, this is total left turn, but when you were growing up, you repaired breast milk pumps? What?
Yeah, I worked for Fisher & Paykel, this white goods kind
home
of...
Home goods?
Yeah, fridges and
they
so
also
on.
Make dishwashers.
Dishwashers, and they make breast pumps.
They make the... I didn't know that.
And they would rent them to different pharmacies and chemists, and they would come back to us, and I'd have to repair them when the motor belt would break. But also have to clean all the dried milk that was on them, so I'd have a toothbrush and some spray and wipe, and that was my first job.
How about that?
A lot of time to think about what else I would prefer to be doing.
So yeah, for sure. You
know. Yeah,
and you're a big surfer, and you do snowboarding, and it's like. Wait, by the way, is there snow there in Australia right now?
The opposite. It's summer now. But I was just in Courchevel, France last week with my family snowboarding.
Did you do some skiing?
Yeah, I did a lot of skiing, a lot of snowboarding, and my kids were all doing backflips.
You must have played a lot of sports growing up.
I did the 110 hurdles. That was my event.
Oh, really?
I wasn't quite quick enough for the 100, but I was tall enough and agile enough for the hurdles. So it was a good combination.
What about footy? Did you play any footy?
AFL football, yep. And played for 8 or 9 years. And then when I was 17, I dislocated my shoulder and tore all the ligaments. And it was, I'd been surfing a lot at the same time. And so I had 8 weeks of sitting on the couch doing nothing. And I was like, oh, I don't want to risk not surfing anymore. And then sort of gave that up. And
must be a lot of dislocated shoulders in AFL football.
Every injury I have now, back and things that start to play up, I swear we're from like 9 years of just getting belted on the football field. Like it's intense, and your body would shatter if you got hit at that speed now. But running full pelt into each other, you know, I got 2 concussions when I was like 14, 15.
Jeez. I remember going to Melbourne and seeing going to an AFL match and just watching and just seeing like the pure athleticism of these guys running, kicking, catching, tackling, all of them just incredible athletes. It's amazing. Whoa, I'm surprised. Yeah, it's wild. Yeah.
Hey, so I'm still just in awe of your just general manhood and exposure to elements and things like that. So down there in Australia, you got the snakes, you got the spiders, you got the sharks. When you're surfing, have you ever seen a dorsal fin? And when you were out back just running around with your motorcycles and pop guns and shit, did you ever see any of the snakes or spiders or things like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When I first moved to Byron Bay, there was a string of shark attacks, 2 deaths, and then one guy survived in the space of 2 weeks, one out the front of my house and one 10 minutes south of me and 5 minutes north. And I was like, oh, where have I moved to? What have I done? This is crazy. And then
you're still paddling out.
Yeah, when there was other people in the water. So there was your chances.
Your odds.
Your odds were a little better. But there was a period when there would just be choppers, helicopters going up and down the coastline and just like shark spotting, and then they'd have a siren on because there was, for whatever reason, just this like kind of feeding frenzy.
Well, that's how they do it. So they fly above, and then if they see one, there's a little siren from the helicopter.
Yeah, or they tell the police, and the police would come down with a big speaker and tell you to get out of the water, and everyone would sort of sit there and go, oh, I'm not getting out of the water, fucking you. And as each guy starts paddling, and it's like, all right, fine, we'll go in.
Aren't sand sharks. The only kind of shark they've got down there are the big daddies, right?
Yeah, they're bull sharks great whites are the most predominant.
No thanks.
What about the snakes? You saw snakes?
Heaps of snakes. Yeah, yeah. Heaps of snakes. King brown, the brown snakes, which is, you know, you've got kind of 15 minutes if you get the anti-venom in you before you...
Yeah, and the brown spider is also like the most venom.
Well, the redback spider is... And then what's the brown spider?
Physically pulling his shirt down your anxiety
attack. I gotta hang up.
We see a lot of snakes around our house, but also a lot of big pythons. And the pythons are really territorial and keep the bad ones away. And so you want those ones around.
Python is not bad. What do you?
They're not. They're not venomous, but they're. But they're very territorial with the brown snakes and the red-bellied black snakes and the ones that are nasty. And so we don't mind having the pythons around.
The pythons aren't looking to mess you up. They're not looking to attack.
No, I mean, my kids will go and grab them by the tail sometimes.
How do they do their killing if they don't have the venom? Do they just, they're squeezers?
Like mice and rats, and they'll just swallow.
Squeezers.
Matt Damon, the first time he was asking me all these questions before they came out Australia. I was like, you're fine. The first day he drives down the street, gets out of a car, and steps straight on a snake. I've been there 42 years and never stepped on a snake.
This guy's a dummy.
He's a dummy.
What did the angel do? The angel buy himself a pair of boots immediately after that? Right up to the hip.
And a helmet, gloves, a pair of waders.
Oh my God. Wait, Chris, go back to the water for a second with the sharks. Do you still go in the water?
Sure he does.
Oh yeah, I surf every day. I mean, people still surf. It's like all the statistics you hear.
But get hit by lightning.
Hit by lightning or driving a car is worse. And I heard one that more people die in America a shaking, a vending machine trying to get chocolate or whatever, and it collapsing on them. Now, I don't know if that's true, but
Sean's got a vending machine story.
He almost got cut to ribbons with an exploding glass door there at Chin Chin when they were closed too early, right?
I eat a lot of junk food, Chris. Wait a minute.
You know what I love about the Avengers crew? You guys all seem to be having a good time, don't they? Every time I see you guys,
of course,
you and Robert and all the whole crew, you guys are all just yucking it up, and it's kind of fun.
It's a good group. It's a good group. And I think, you know, everyone had come into it expecting kind of nothing. And it was right at the beginning of, I guess, the sort of superhero emergence. And each time one of them worked, it was a win for the others and their individual films. But then when the Avengers worked, we're like, oh, we're going to make a second one and a third one and a fourth one. And so everyone's kind of pinching themselves that we're still here and it's still working.
Yeah,
it's
pretty cool.
And just a really good group of people. Well, just such a fun people.
You deserve it, pal.
Thanks.
You really do.
Great films.
Thanks so much.
Chris Hemsworth, what a pleasure.
Thanks for chatting with us
today, guys. Thank you. Yeah.
When does Crime 101, what's the release date?
It's already out.
It's already out.
It came out when?
It's
in cinemas.
When did it come out, Sean?
It came out, wait, I have
it. February 13th or February 12th?
February 13th.
February 13th.
No, it's great. Nice. It's a character-driven crime thriller, you know, and it has a beautiful sort of suspense through the action, but also through the dramatic scenes. And the way Bart's crafted this movie, it's edgier seat, pulse pounding from start to finish.
Sick, and sick cast as well.
Halle Berry, you, go ahead.
Barry Keoghan, Mark Ruffalo, Monica Barbaro, Nick Nolte. A phenomenal cast, but it's sort of a throwback to the heist films, the 70s, 80s, 90s, but has a contemporary feel to it.
Cool. I'm seeing it this
weekend. I just have to say, now that I've seen it and I'm a big fan of the movie and of course you, that I won't reveal anything, but when that one character gets in the car,
that's kind of a reveal.
All I'll say. I mean, that was really cool. You don't know when part of the movie I'm talking about.
When that one character gets
you know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
I was like, whoa, that's pretty cool. I was on the edge of my seat.
I'm stoked to see that.
Anyway, Chris, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having
me,
guys.
Chris, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. I'm sure
Amanda would say hi if she was here, and maybe I'll make it to the next one.
Please do, mate.
I hope.
Thanks, guys.
All right,
pal. Good to see you.
Yeah. Good to see you.
Bye, buddy.
Thank you.
Peace.
Bye, pal.
Bye-bye.
Splendid. Just splendid.
Really good.
This is a great guy.
I mean, this is a great guy.
I don't know.
First of all, great guy.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. I think
he was great.
I don't know
big
why.
Big star. And yet, so grounded. As you know him a little bit. I hung out with him for a couple days. What a good dude.
Humble, kind.
Oh, my God.
Wait, what's 26 minus 11?
Boy, that's definitely going to be somewhere around 15.
Honestly, that actually came out.
15 years. So he's been playing Thor for 15 years. That's a lot.
I want to go back to the math question because I'm so disturbed.
Is this worthy of recording, Sean? You know, we're on right now.
Always still.
I'd say cut it, but I need the world to hear that.
Mm-hmm. This is our life, guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
Welcome to it.
Listener, this is, you know, it's free to you, but it costs us a great deal.
I mean,
time, patience.
He's 15 years as Thor. Mm-hmm. And then doing all this other stuff in between.
How about I threw you guys at the beginning when I said it was Kirk's dad?
Yeah, great job, Sean.
I mean, it's sick. Sick. What a burn.
I was like, who is this? Who could it be?
This guy's unbelievable.
Oh, the breast pump information.
Breast pump information. Right?
I gotta join my wife on some of these.
Yeah, by the way, I wanna know what all that is. Hey guys, when you have
Oh, that's it. You're right into it, huh?
Yeah.
No more wrap up?
Nope. No, I gotta go.
Wait, Sean, do you have a performance tonight?
No, this is our one night off.
You're dark.
Oh, good for you, JB.
We're dark, yeah.
Thanks,
we're dark.
Guys. And then, so what do you end up doing tonight? Where does Scotty gets a night out?
I'm not moving. I'm not moving. I'm so exhausted. Okay,
that's fair to Scotty.
Yeah.
what about this afternoon?
Well, we might
take him for ice cream.
Yes, or no, but you know what I've been craving lately is sushi. And now when you guys eat sushi, do you put, and you know, they come up with a side of ginger.
Yeah, and usually next to it's a little pinch mound of green mustard called. Well, no, I think a better way to say that is, what did the sushi say to the bumblebee?
What's up, bee? Bye.
Bye.
Boy, that was a stretch.
Will is sick.
He just threw up his hot wings.
This is terrible. What? That was terrible.
Smart. Less. Smart. Less.
Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Bennett Barbaco, Michael Grant Terry, and Rob Armjarf.
Smart. Less.